You'll have plenty of opportunity to stream a wonderful array of films at this year's Port Townsend Film Festival, with interviews too. Watch on your laptop or TV or on demand. The festival is thrilled to share a selection of more than 80 films this year. There are also special events, and you can join us at the Free Community Outdoor Theater tonight, Saturday, and Sunday on Taylor Street. All screenings start at 7:30 p.m. Come early with your portable chair and grab a spot. There are no tickets required, and don't forget to mask up. Tomorrow night at 7:30 is the 20th anniversary celebration and screening of Legally Blonde's 2001 release. Grab your pink suit and your four-legged friend and enter our L and Bruiser lookalike contest, where entrants will face off on stage before the film, and there will be prizes. And by the way, that includes a special appearance by the film's screenwriter and Chimicum High School grad, Kirsten Kiwi Smith. How many blondes does it take to change Harvard Law School? Only one, if she's as fabulous as the main character, Elle Woods. Here to tell you why is our special guest today on KPTZ, Kirsten Kiwi Smith. Kiwi.
Hello.
Yeah. You board a plane tomorrow morning and join us at the 22nd annual Port Townsend Film Festival. Welcome back to the Pacific Northwest and to Port Townsend.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be home.
We're just loving it that you're going to be here.
Kiwi. I'm loving that there's going to be a dog and human costume competition. I'm very excited to see what Port Townsend is going to trot out for this. And also, I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to wear. What are you going to wear?
My dog ears, I guess. I don't know.
Perfect. And heavy shades of pink.
Is something pink?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Like my nose. Kiwi, you and your writing partner, Karen McCullough, have Legally Blonde, 10 Things I Hate About You, She's the Man, The House Bunny, and The Ugly Truth, among others, to your credit. Among other projects, you're also a novelist and a poet. Do I see a theme here? How did your childhood affect your affinity for this kind of storytelling?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I grew up on a sailboat with my parents in San Pedro, Washington. My parents are from the Southwest, but they became captivated by the ocean and the West. And so they built their own sailboat and we lived on that for 4 years. And that was a very quirky, interesting childhood in which I didn't have TV. And so I read a ton of books and relied on my imagination and to kind of invent imaginary friend characters. And I think that was kind of the start of it. And my love of writing grew once we moved to Port Ludlow in 1980. And I went to Chimicum High School and had amazing teachers there. Namely, Sue Phillips was my English and creative writing and French teacher. And she was wildly encouraging and supportive and a tough teacher, strict, but really creative and fostered my creativity as well as all of the rest of us. And so she was certain that I had a path forward as a writer if I wanted to pursue that. And so I did. And I went to college in Los Angeles, kind of returning full circle to my Southern California roots, and ended up in the movie business, where I probably dreamed of participating in some way, even just as a young Chimicum teen.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you about mentors that came along the way. Mentors in high school are extremely important. I know that was important for both of my sons.
Yes. In junior high, also, there was a teacher, Mrs. Peterson, who was really like wacky and creative. And she was also a great inspiration to me and to others. And she taught drama and we would do play readings aloud in her class. And it had always had a fun element of like, let's put on a show. And so, yes, I think both of those women really impacted me and supported me so much.
Now, along the way, you got together with a writing partner. How did that happen?
I was working at a film production company, very small company called Cinetel Films. It was my first job out of college. I got an internship and then they were paying me to read scripts and kind of write book reports on the scripts. It's called coverage in Hollywood parlance, but I was reading scripts and I got a script from a woman who lived in Denver at the time. And I read it and she had a cover letter and with her phone number. And so I called her and said, I really like your script. And if you ever come to Los Angeles, maybe we should meet and have drinks or and brainstorm or something. And so she came to LA and we met and we had one margarita and then maybe it turned into two and three and probably four. And then before we knew it, we were brainstorming a movie idea and writing on a cocktail napkin. And that was kind of our first script was born over margaritas.
I know if you let life happen to you, really interesting things can unfold. Did you plan a journey to where you wanted to go right now? Meaning, I guess, are you focused in that sort of way, or was there a certain amount of serendipity involved?
Well, I think probably a combination, right? Like, I definitely dreamed of returning to Southern California when, after we moved here, it felt like a viable possibility, still on the same coast. And I knew I wanted to go to college. I think my dad, Mel, was hoping I would study econ or something, but I got a D in that course, so that was not great. But I guess there was just also a very strong work ethic handed to me from my parents who owned their own business and worked out of our home. So I always saw them working and creating and loving their work and really being committed to it. And so I think that inspired me. A lot of my great friends, Sally Shaw and Jamie Smith, worked in my parents' office, actually. So pretty much all my friends seem to have had my mom as a boss, I mean, including me. And she's still my boss to this day. So, but yeah, I think I just dreamed of California and that's why I went to college there. And I also worked in a video store when I was living in Port Ludlow. I worked in Peninsula Video for 4 years and I worked in the Jefferson County Library. So I love books and I love movies. And I thought maybe there's a way to combine those two passions. And when I got to college, realizing, oh, I could be a screenwriter and then I could apply my love of writing into something that could actually maybe earn me a living. So I think that was my main goal. And then just as I started writing scripts and thinking about movie ideas, it was in the early 90s where I just was really inspired to tell more stories about young women and fun fish out of water stories about women. And I just was compelled to write the stories for the movies that I wanted to see as a devoted audience member.
When you have these inspirations about writing, I mean, we all know that writing takes a certain amount of discipline. It takes the ability to translate what you write into different art forms. Like, for example, poetry is different than narrative and narrative or short stories or novels or whatever. They're different than screenplays. How did you make that transition? Was it sort of osmosis from watching so many films, or was there a way that you sort of entered into that whole genre of screenplay?
Well, I think the common denominator between the poetry I was writing and the screenplays is that I was writing a poem was like a character. Always I was inventing a character and having a scene with a beginning, middle, and end in the poem. And so that kind of is similar to writing a scene in a script where you kind of are catching someone in an exciting moment. But I really got my training in screenwriting from another mentor, Catalin Nell, who hired me to work at Cinetel Films and gave me that job writing coverage and reading all the scripts that she assigned to me and writing all those synopses of the scripts. It was great training for taking a script and kind of honing it down to its essential elements. And then, just learning how to structure a story that way. And she would also, my other training was writing kind of beat sheets about projects in development. And that was another way to kind of learn to sort of create the building blocks of a story that way by reading all these scripts and by kind of turning them into outlines, turning them into synopses. And that is just an education, the way that an aspiring novelist would read hundreds of novels. And then, of course, it's always scary when you go set out to do it yourself, but that just becomes the hard work of like facing a blank page and putting in the hours and hours of frustration. Right.
And then taking, like you say, in doing coverage, taking something apart, putting back together again, I mean, it makes you understand how things, something is built.
Exactly. And
same thing with the screenplay.
And oftentimes I even, to this day, if I'm writing something in a genre and there's like a movie that I love, like if I'm writing a political comedy, I want to watch the movie Dave, then I will just watch the movie. I'll pause each scene and, you know, write down what the scene was. And even like, you know, outside shot of a, of like a park, I'll put that down. So you really can be able to tell, like demystify what a movie is. Yeah. It helped me a lot in my structuring of stories.
Would you have done anything differently in retrospect? I mean, your journey to become a screenwriter, obviously, I think there were bumps along the road that you encountered. Was it just a sheer grit, or would you have done anything differently getting to where you're at right now?
Let's see. I feel like maybe I would have started directing a little earlier. I made a couple of short films and then got frustrated with the process of how slow everything was moving. But I don't know, maybe I would have committed to that earlier so I could have had more training in that. But I feel pretty fortunate in the fact that I follow my instincts and creativity and my bliss about what kind of stories I wanted to tell. And I mean, I got very lucky in terms of timing that the first script that we sold, 10 Things I Hate About You, got made because there was a hunger for a teen movie, that Disney wanted to make a teen movie. So, but that was also us looking around going, let's have more teen movies. So I don't know. This is maybe just a roundabout. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but maybe just more focus on directing. But I'm really proud of everything we've accomplished. And I want to just keep writing more and more stories about women. So that's my plan.
The movie making process can be very tedious. And it kind of leads me to my next question. And that is, when you write something and then it gets accepted, and then it goes through the process of this huge system of moving parts, standing on a set, sometimes I've wondered, how the hell does this thing ever get made? You know, because there's so many moving parts there, and the director is there having an overall vision of where it's supposed to be and what it's supposed to be. But when something that you've written leaves your hands and ends up in that process, do you ever feel like you've sort of lost control of it?
All the time. Yeah, all the time. Right. It's just part of the job description, I think, is that you give the script over. I mean, there's a lot of other frustrations in getting to that point, namely the notes and the suggestions and the demands on the changes to the script never really stop until the movie is released. We've been pretty fortunate in that most of our scripts were, for the most part, pretty locked right before it starts shooting. So there's not too many wild, wild changes other than amazing ad-libs and things like that. And a couple scenes that definitely don't look like you thought they would. But I mean, it's a beautiful experience as well to go to a set and see 100 people who are all putting their greatest effort into realizing something that you dreamed would be, you know, that you wrote alone in your room or in a room with your friend. So
seeing that manifested.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking when saw Legally Blonde again, that the casting, for example, the nuances that the actors bring to the script.
Yes.
The way comedy is directed is so important. And the way comedy is written, there's a certain way of doing that that actually makes that happen.
Yes. And I think casting is obviously a huge, huge 90% of it. And the cast is so good in Legally Blonde. I mean, led by Reese, who is an icon for great reason. And she was such a great leader. And I mean, her work in the movie is insane, and she's so talented. And we were kind of flying under the radar with this movie. It was a smaller budget movie, and there was no advance hype on it, and we just kind of made the movie that we all wanted to. And there wasn't a ton of meddling and pressure on us. So I think you kind of feel that there's joy in the movie and a lot of kind of innocence, and we were I mean, the director was quite young. I think he was like 27, 28.
Wow. Maybe.
And we were quite young in our like early 30s making it. So, and the producer was as well. So we all were just kind of going for it, you know?
Well, it definitely had pace. I have to tell you, that's for sure.
Yes.
And also just the range. I sort of acquired a new appreciation for Reese Witherspoon and her range of ability in watching her in this film.
Oh, I know. She's hilarious, but she brings so much vulnerability and then she does that dance of just being like really funny, but like also you're just like, oh no, you know, you want her to succeed and she's also, she's brilliant, formidable and vulnerable all at the same time. And just, yeah, I love
one more. We just have a couple of minutes left.
Oh, yeah.
In writing, I know it's changed because of the streaming aspect of a series. It's almost like when you write a series now, you're just writing a long movie in some ways because of binge watching and that kind of thing. But what do you think is the big difference between writing for television and writing for film?
In writing for film, you have the beauty of your three-act structure, which you have this very clear beginning, middle, and end. In TV, you're constantly writing a cliffhanger at the end of every episode, and you're juggling just a whole larger world with far more characters. I find TV much more challenging. I mean, I created a show based on my novel for Netflix, and it was a great education for me because I wasn't really writing a lot of cliffhanger moments other than an exciting end of a scene in a script. But yeah, TV is just it's a bigger beast. I think in a way movies have become the new TV in that when I started, it was like people would dream of being a feature film writer and they would slum in TV. Now I feel like you slum in movies to become a TV writer.
That's funny.
And it's very, I mean, you have like, you're working in a writer's room with a lot of people. You have to get dressed a lot more often. And as a TV writer, as a feature writer, you can pretty much not wear pants and get away with it.
Well, okay. I know for a fact that there are a lot of budding young writers in this neck of the woods.
Oh, cool.
What's your advice?
Oh, I think try to give yourself a daily page count or word count. And I mean, well, okay, I have a few things. If you're writing a movie, outlining it is essential, and reading scripts and kind of doing those beat sheets and learning the script structure and attempting to give yourself an outline of where you're writing is really key. When you've given yourself your daily page count, try not to start each morning by rewriting the previous day's work, because otherwise you'll get really stuck. And what you want to do is try to just burn through and write your first draft, and then you can go back and rewrite. Yeah. Another thing, if you want to be in a feature film or TV world, like, you know, reading deadline.com, where you are learning a lot about like what's going on in the marketplace and the trends and starting to understand the lay of the land is really useful too. And I also think very basic, just practice what your log line of your movie is. You know, if you can't describe it in one sentence, then you don't have a clean story, and you want to be able to have a very clean story with clean conflict immediately.
That's the big bingo, isn't it?
I think so.
Well, Kristen Kiwi Smith, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
This yeah. And I would just want to remind our listeners, don't forget to check out tonight's film, Lily Topples the World. And that's a story about a 20-year-old Lily Hevish, the world's most acclaimed domino toppler and the only girl in her field. On Sunday evening, A League of Their Own, and that's a story surrounding the all-woman baseball league that started in 1943 during the war. Tomorrow
night. There's a lot of girl power in this lineup.
Yeah. And then tomorrow night, Kristen Kiwi Smith, thanks so much for joining us today on KPTZ, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Community Outdoor Free Cinema on Taylor Street for the 20th anniversary release of Legally Blonde. Thank you so much for joining us on KPTZ.
Thank you. I can't wait to see you guys tomorrow.
All right.
I feel comfortable using legal jargon in everyday life. I object.
Her list of extracurricular activities is impressive.
She was in a Ricky Martin video.
Aren't we always looking for diversity?
Welcome to Harvard.